Welcome to the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast. Every week, we'll be talking shop with lacrosse goalies, coaches, and special guests. This is the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast. Now your host, Coach Damon Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Damon Wilson. This is a podcast 100% dedicated to lacrosse goalies, where it is my job to interview the best goalies, the best coaches, to pull out the techniques and the tips that you can use in your own game. And this week, we got a great guest. It's Coach Jason Witt. Now, unlike all the previous guests to this point on the podcast, Coach Witt actually doesn't coach lacrosse. He's an ice hockey coach. So we're not talking about lacrosse specifics in this episode, but what we are talking about is solid coaching fundamentals that can be applied to any sport, lacrosse, ice hockey, football, soccer, doesn't matter. What you're going to learn in this episode about coaching applies to every single sport. Coach Witt has a passion for coaching youth sports and creating great atmospheres that produce young leaders. I'm sure you're going to learn a ton from this episode, so please enjoy this conversation with Coach Jason Witt. Before we get started with Coach Witt, I do want to read a quick word from our sponsor, and that is my own online Lax Goalie Rat Camp. I started learning to play the position of goalie in 1999, and at that time, there was not a lot of materials available online for goalies to learn. And that's exactly why I created the online Lax Goalie Rat Camp. So if you're located in a specific area where there's not a lot of lacrosse, if you have no lacrosse coach, if you're a parent who wants to understand how to work with your kid, you can go through this camp, and with video, I teach you everything you need to know. The technique, the physical training you need to do, the mental training you need to do, the lacrosse IQ that you need to understand to be a leader on the field, everything that you need to know to be an elite lacrosse goalie. This is your plan to train an elite lacrosse goalie. It's called the online Lax Goalie Rat Camp, and you can check it out at laxgoalierat.com/goal. It's laxgoalierat.com/goal. Enjoy the show. Well, great. My next guest on the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast is Coach Jason Witt out of Fairbanks, Alaska. Coach, welcome to the show.
Damon, I appreciate you having me on. Thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is going to be a little bit of a different podcast because unlike basically all my previous guests, you're not a lacrosse goalie. And what you are is an ice hockey goalie coach. And we're going to focus on really coaching fundamentals and a lot of concepts in that area. But before we dig into that, could you maybe just give a little introduction about yourself, where you're from, what you coach and all that?
Sure, absolutely. My name is Jason Witt. I am a youth and high school ice hockey coach. I'm currently in Fairbanks, Alaska. So I coach teams, travel teams that are from Fairbanks. I have been coaching youth sports since late 2008 as a volunteer and officially began in 2009. So I'm 10 years into it at this point. I've been in and around sports ever since I was a little kid. I grew up playing football and hockey. Wanted to be really good at hockey. Turns out I was much better at football. So when I was done playing football, and hockey for that matter, I kind of a dual sport athlete growing up. When I was all finished, I started playing at the club level in college at Portland State. And then shortly after that, I started to have an interest as far as coaching, and I got into it shortly after. Personally, as a coach and just as a human being, I have a heart for mentoring youth athletes. So I don't anticipate at any point in my entire life that I won't be in or around hockey or some other game coaching athletes.
Yeah, and that's really where you and I got connected on Twitter. I follow you at Coach Jason Witt on Twitter. Just really inspiring messages and just great stuff on coaching in general, not sport specific, but just coaching, how to be a great coach. how to inspire players. And what I wanted to do is just read some of your tweets, and then we could have some discussion on each one, and maybe you could give a little more depth, a little more insight. So the first one I got is this: practice makes perfect. If you practice wrong technique, you perform the technique perfectly wrong. Complete a lazy practice. Guess what? You're teaching yourself to perform perfectly lazy. What habits are you practicing perfectly?
Wow. One of my favorites, right? The age old, you know, practice made perfect, and perfectly good practice makes perfection.
Yeah.
So when I'm talking about that, so up until, you know, the last couple of years where I was coaching older kids, I found myself spending an enormous amount of time at the high school level correcting basically bad habits that have been learned through practice. And so what I mean by that is that anytime, specifically as an ice hockey coach, or really, I mean, like you said, it can be applied to any type of coaching or athlete experience. Anytime that you step on to purposefully try to be better as an athlete, it should be in a correct capacity, and it should be at 100% effort. So what I was trying to get across in that particular tweet was just that, like I say, every moment, every practice is vitally important. And not only that, but vitally important that you are completing, you know, skills and building, you know, skills and growth and things of that nature, that it's being completed correctly.
Yeah. 100% agree. Yeah. It's not like practice and game are any different. I think some players think that, well, I can kind of, you know, dog it in practice, but once the game comes around, like I'm going to turn it up. And kind of what that tweet is getting at for me is that, no, like, they're the same. Like, you need to practice at 100% speed with 100%, you know, perfection in the technique, so that you can be ready to play that way in the game. Do you agree with that?
I do. I'm a firm believer that how you practice is how you're going to play, right? Practice is where you build skill. Games are where you perform those skills. So if during practice you are performing your skills at half, it's very likely that when you're in games that you're also going to be performing those skills at half, which is why I wouldn't say that I coach effort, but I definitely am cognizant of effort levels during practices and try my best to put the kids in an atmosphere where they are interested and likely to give 100% effort.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. You also have this, the lacrosse goalie space is kind of interesting because there's not a lot of coaches. And so you have kids who could be practicing wrong technique unknowingly. Do you get that in the hockey space? And I'm curious, like, what are your thoughts on like how to avoid that?
Are you just to be clear, are you talking about specifically a goalie or specifically all athletes?
I guess all athletes.
Well, I had mentioned before, right? So my experience had been at, you know, from the 14 to 18 age group. And I did find myself, you know, consistently trying to correct bad habits that were formed either by practice, if you will, or coaching from previous coaches. So, yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I feel often that when not properly coached, that it is very easy for athletes to pick up bad habits that, you know, will have to be corrected at some point down the line.
Yep, absolutely. Awesome. The next one I've got here, it says, the best teams have their best players committed to the slogan heart over hype. What do you mean by that one?
What I mean by that is that, well, obviously there's some ancillary traits that make athletes really good at the sport that they're playing. Whether it be for ice hockey, if you're a good skater or, you know, a good shooter or things of that nature. By the nature of the sport, if you are good at those skills, naturally good at those skills, you're probably going to be one of the better kids on the team. But what I've also found is that it's okay for you to be really good at mental traits as well that can push an ordinary athlete into an exceptional athlete. Things like positivity, encouragement, mental toughness, things like that. So when I'm talking about the heart, right, and those are heart traits, heart, when I'm talking about the heart, right? When a kid has those things, right? Tenacity, empathy, things like that. I mean, go on and on about those traits that make great athletes. What I mean by that is all of that comes from the heart or comes from within, right? Rather than me as a coach consistently telling you how great you are as a good skater or things like that. So what I meant by heart over hype is that most great athletes have an internal drivetrain or an internal motivation that makes them great. They don't rely on maybe something that is coming from externally, whether it comes from a coach or media or something of that nature. So that's what I meant by that.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. When I think back to some of the teams that I played on, that I played with, and that I coached, sometimes you see those guys that have, or the kids that have amazing heart, really lift the team and inspire the team. And they might not be like the best athletes on the team, but you know, it's that heart and passion and desire coming from within that really inspires even the best players on the team.
Absolutely. I'm in 100% agreement, right? Every team is made up of different athletes, right? Skills and things of that nature. As a coach, I purposefully, when I'm deciding kids to be on my team, right, I'm filling every role. And every role includes mental toughness, right? Empathy, hard work, team players, good kids, right? Gratitude and things like that. So nowadays in competitive sports, it's so much more than just how good you are at the sport, right? It's how good you are as a person that can really differentiate you between, you know, a great athlete and an exceptional athlete. And of course, we're all looking for exceptional, we're all looking to build exceptional athletes.
Yeah, totally. I probably should have asked this one at the very beginning, but when people ask you, coach, what is your coaching philosophy? How do you answer that question?
I answer that question that I'm going to do whatever it takes from a coaching standpoint to create an atmosphere and a culture that is based on positivity and encouragement.
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's my overall, right? If my coaching philosophy, if you're talking specifically hockey, right? I mean, we can get into the ins and outs of that, right? As far as having speed in the neutral zone, strong forechecking, things of that nature.
Yeah,
I don't think that's what you meant.
Yeah, exactly. It's more of a philosophy of the environment that you're trying to create and not necessarily like, you know, how I'm going to teach the exact technique and strategy of the specific sport.
Right, yeah. Right. Cool. With that, I'm a huge proponent of confidence, right? And confidence is basically built upon positivity and encouragement, which is where my philosophy basically originated.
Yeah, positivity and encouragement. What do you do when you don't see positivity and encouragement? For example, you know, this is a lacrosse goalie podcast, but you know, we could have the exact same situation in ice hockey where, you know, say a goalie gives up an easy one and you see a kid kind of, whether through its body language or what he says, brings in some negativity, like, oh, he should have had that one. I'm curious, as a coach, when you see that, how do you handle that?
Great question. Well, obviously we're going to, as a coach, right, we want to eliminate all of the negativity, right? And that can be from, like you said, it could be body language, right? What you're talking, your actual language, right? And things of that nature. Correction for me in those particular things, that correcting athletes to align with my coaching philosophy, positivity, encouragement, happens kind of in three steps, actually. The first step is I would pull that player aside, and it would be a private conversation that we had specifically as far as like, this is what I saw, this is what you did, and this is how it affected your performance and the performance of your teammates. If that worked, great. Typically, when you're dealing with a high-level athlete, often they just need to be aware of what it was, and they want to have the motivation, if you will, to correct it.
Right.
If that doesn't work, then typically, because we are coaching youth athletes, right? Step two would be to include more people in that conversation, right? So then I would typically, at that point, I would add in a parent, right? Or both parents, right? Mm-hmm. Then we would talk about that and we would reiterate the exact same thing, which is, you know, this is the action that was witnessed. This is how it affects the performance of the athlete. And this is also how it affects the performance of the team. What is our plan of attack for correction at that point? Typically, I don't have to make it past those two steps, but if I do, then it becomes the step three, which is now now it's the whole team, right? So we have the athlete and the whole team. This is what was witnessed. This is how it affected your performance. This is how it affects the total performance of the team. Now, as a team, how do we correct it and make sure that those types of actions aren't replicated in the future?
Yep, I love it. Yeah, those are three great points. And a lot of times goalies email me and say, like, you know, their team's getting down on them, or, you know, they're now emailing like a third party person. And so it's important for coaches to kind of monitor that situation, because they might not even be aware that's happening, and implement those three steps if you see it happening. Because like you said, coach, we want positivity.
It's imperative that every action that a coach does on a team is built and is intentional to creating positive relationships with the athletes. And when you're talking about, if you put a focus on creating positive relationships with the athletes, it opens up a communication line that you would be shocked at. That just when you build that relationship, when you have trust with that relationship, and that goalie can come and talk to you about, this is what I'm feeling, this is what I'm going through, those communication lines are open. And you can understand what they're going through. You can address what they're going through. You can correct and watch growth soar. It's amazing.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. Mm-hmm. Cool. Let's go on to the next one. The next one says, you can spot an expert coach versus a phony coach from a mile away. Look for three little words. I don't know. The phony coach will have all the answers, while the expert coach will admit what they don't know and immediately get working on finding the answers. I love that one.
Yeah. So I learned early on, right, that I'm not the best coach ever. But what I also learned right from the beginning was that I don't know is not an admission that you're not a great coach. In fact, what it means, though, is that you have the capacity to be a great coach, because first of all, you can identify that I don't know everything. I will never know everything, because the moment when I do know everything, everything will change. Whether it be how you attack an opposing team as far as their strategies and things of that nature, or my foolproof plan as far as how to build relationships and things like that. So now having that knowledge, right? I felt, again, if we go back to building relationships, right? When I can build a relationship with an athlete or a parent or administrator or anyone else to have an environment where I can honestly say, I don't know, but I will find out that answer. I feel like that is a better trust builder than for me to maybe not necessarily know the answer, but have an idea of what that answer is. And then it be ultimately incorrect because I didn't do the proper research or I didn't learn up enough on that particular question. So yeah, that's what I meant by that. I'm also a big believer of the phrase of, if you can do everything, you can do nothing for me. I believe inherently that we all have skills and knowledge that we should be considered an expert at. And I think it's okay that one person isn't an expert in everything, even if that means it's the head coach, right? The head coach, the best thing that they could do, or an assistant coach for that matter, but the head coach especially, the best thing they can do is A, identify areas where they need to get better and continuously be a learner. B, to make sure that they understand that it's okay that they don't know everything, but But it's not okay if they're not using their skills and expertise to put people in places that has the expertise on something that they're not very good at yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Yeah, a lot of times, you know, especially like when parents want to jump in and maybe coach goalies or coach a specialty position or a specialty thing, they think they need to be an expert. And really you don't. I think you just need to be like one step, maybe two steps ahead of the people you're coaching, if you know what I mean. And oftentimes that makes you a better coach because like I'm not a professional goalie, but you know, I'd say I'm a pretty good goalie coach because like I know where some of these beginners are at because I was there, you know? So I think I can relate to them a little bit more than the pros can who've been playing goalie since, you know, they were in kindergarten. But I also had that attitude of like, I don't know everything. And if someone asks me something or has a different philosophy that they want to try, like I'm willing to research it and, you know, do my homework and figure out, you know, what the right answer is. So that's why I love that one so much.
Well, first of all, I applaud you. Thank you for taking time and effort to coach our youth athletes. And thank you for being self-aware enough to know that you don't know all the answers and be okay with the fact that as athletes are growing, us too, as coaches are growing with them in some capacity.
Yeah. That kind of gets in, actually leads right into the next tweet, which is great, which is the greatest players have a constant desire to be great. Same goes for coaches. I love it. So it's like that concept of like, you know, as athletes, we all understand that great athletes want to be great and they improve at their game. But you know, that same exact thing and that same desire for greatness should go for coaches as well.
Well, there's two reasons that you would do that, right? And I mean, obviously when you're doing the tweets, right, I'm limited to how many characters that I can put in there.
I have a whole thought process
of going through it.
Yeah.
But my thinking behind that was, right, and obviously it's probably just a snippet of that moment that I had as far as the thought process and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But what I'm thinking of that, like, it's inherent that, you know, high level elite athletes want to be great and that they will do whatever it takes to continuously doing that. Right. And I think the same can be said for elite coaches, right, that they always want to be getting better for their own satisfaction, something similar to an athlete, but also to make sure that they have the right tools and equipment to be able to equip their athletes to get better, right? I mean, I could go cliche after cliche, right? You know, it's easier to get to the top than it is to stay at the top, right? Mm-hmm. Or you could talk about, what would be another one off the top of my head, right? Once you think that you've learned everything, you've already been passed by someone who's learning. You know what I mean? Like again yeah. and again. And what's the common denominator in all those cliches, right? It references to learning. Be a constant learner, right? Continuously get better at your craft is what the whole idea of that is. And that is not just for the athletes, right? That's not just for the coaches. I mean, if I was to expand that, that could be as a better parent, right? As a better team manager, as a better water person, right? As a better equipment person. Like when you put yourself in an environment of positivity and encouragement and couple it with constant learning or the capacity or the desire to constant learn, you put yourself in a position, you put your athletes, you put your coaches, you put everyone within that organization in a position to succeed beyond their wildest dream.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I always said like athletes and coaches make the best employees because they bring that desire to be great into whatever they do, you know? And I think that's what we're talking about here. If you're coaching a youth, under seven soccer team, you're going to be the best under seven soccer team coach that you can be, you know, and you're going to put your heart and soul into it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge proponent, right? I've been around sports my whole life. I would say that the skills, right, the life skills that you learn by participating in youth sports when done correctly will set you up for success for the rest of your life in many different capacities in your adult life outside of sports. Work is one of them, right? Mm-hmm. Parenting is another one of those, right? Being a good family member to your family would be one of those, right? You're learning all those things, which is why what you learn outside of the game, within the game, as a youth athlete, I'm shocked. I'm shocked and just rewarded daily on seeing ex players learn from me and from the organization and from the parents and just the whole learning, to see them turn out to just be excellent people, right? When I look back 20 years from now, right, and people are talking to me, and right, and first of all, I still love when ex players, you know, reach me, or they reach out to me, and success is one of the things that kind of a little bit off topic that I really enjoy, is that hey, sharing your success today, right? What success was that? And I'm not talking about, you know, I scored a goal or whatever, right? I'm talking about, like, you know, I've got even my 12U kids, right? And it's something that I didn't know how was going to translate over to, you know, my 12U kids, but even they come excited for practice to share what their success was, right? And, you know, kind of, you know, letting them in on a little secret as far as what that looks like, right? Goes back to positivity, encouragement, but also what that looks like on how they're using their skills that they're learning off the ice, right? Just through the environment that we're creating, on how they can use that in their non-hockey life to better the community that they're in or the situation that they're in, whether it be a good son or good daughter or, you know, a good classmate or something like that.
100% agree. I love it. Yeah. Like, the little slogan on my site is teaching kids to be, leaders, in the crease and off the field as well. And you know, the things that you learn, on the lacrosse field, in the crease, leadership, communication, responsibility. I mean, those things all translate into being a great adult. So yeah. I mean, you're coaching those things as well.
Yeah.
All right. This next one, I feel like you wrote for lacrosse goalies, but,
I did.
It says, you will make mistakes. Teammates and coaches are more interested in how you respond to those mistakes than the air itself. Do you respond with hustle and a next play mentality, or pout and exhibit poor body language?
Well, we know the effects. I mean, study after study, we know the effects of poor body language, right? We know how poor body language often leads to weak mental toughness, things of that nature, right? So, like we talked about early, first of all, if we can identify those and if we can correct them, even better, right? But when we're talking about ice hockey, and really any, especially goalies, right? Or defenders, right? When it's a little easier to see when mistakes have been made for them, right? When they're identified, it's easy for coaches, parents, team members to get down on them, right? Because they're easily identifiable as mistakes. From a coaching standpoint, right? If we can create an environment where making a mistake is not only allowed, but encouraged, because we've equipped them with the right skills to be able to overcome that adversity, to be able to overcome that mistake. Once we're able to do that, we know that we have not only created a very strong mentally athlete, but we have given them the life skill to overcome adversity, right? So when I say that, do I want them to make mistakes? Absolutely not. Is it my job to create an environment where I'm teaching them how to eliminate as many mistakes as possible? Yeah, absolutely, right? But when they do make mistakes, because especially hockey, right? It's such a quick game, right? I don't expect my guys to go out there not to make a mistake, right? What I expect them to do is to learn from that mistake, right? Have positivity, encouragement, good body language, and overcome that adversity on the next shift. Because what happened on the last shift doesn't matter. It's the next shift that matters.
Yep.
Or the next play or anything of that nature.
Yeah. A couple points there. The you know, like you mentioned, we talk about it on this podcast a lot, you know, goalies, we have instant feedback. So you make a mistake and boom, goal, you know, not like an attackman who gets stripped of the puck or gets stripped of the ball. And then, you know, minutes later might result in a goal. We make a mistake and it leads to a goal. And the second thing you mentioned there is the body language is so important. And it's something that I think a lot of coaches don't look for or don't coach. And I think that's a mistake because poor body language, like you said, it affects a goalie mentally. And, you know, when a goalie gives up a goal, I call it the most important moment that there is for that goalie because all eyes are on you, your own team's eyes, the opposing team's eyes, fans, right? So how you respond in that situation can really set the tone for your own team and yourself as well. So I think that's something that coaches should really pay attention to and coach.
I do. I would say when I'm creating an atmosphere, right, when I'm figuring out what the key components of my culture is based upon, body language fits into one of those pillars, which would be, you know, again, I mean, I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, but positivity and encouragement, right? It takes a stronger teammate to lift someone else up after their misfortune than it does to put blame on someone, right? The easy way out is to blame someone else for their mistake, right? Or a mistake that, like you had said, you know, attacker that had been stripped of the ball. And then a couple of seconds or a couple minutes later, you know, a goal was, you know, scored because they didn't do their job. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's huge, right? An athlete overcomes adversity on a consistent basis, ultimately will probably show up on the scoreboard and in your win-loss record.
Yep. Love it. Love it. Awesome. Here's the next one I got. So it says, defeat is a springboard for discovery. When you are able as a player to self-assess your weaknesses, you can properly plan for improvement. Defeat helps in identifying weaknesses. That's discovery. I like that one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we learn the most. Well, I wouldn't say that. We learn a lot in adversity, right? Whether it be on the scoreboard or a specific play or a goal or something of that nature. It helps us identify. When we have the mentality as coaches that we can relay to our athletes that making a mistake, right, or a series of mistakes is not the end of the world, and we can learn and we can discover how we can self-assess and what we did on those plays and to be able to correlate that into improvement so that way they don't happen again. The moment that we're able to do that by building that relationship, by building skill, the better off that athlete will be for future success and also the team. I mean, they kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times it takes defeat to really bring those into light. I feel like sometimes you can, you know, if you make a lot of mistakes and you're still winning, you know, it's not as urgent that you correct those things like defeat does. Like taking a loss really, really as a coach for coaches and players kicks it into gear. Like, okay, we've got to fix something. We've got to identify this weakness and get it fixed. Would you agree with that?
I would agree 100%.
Yeah.
Not only from a coaching standpoint, strategy and team aspect, but having a locker room full of players who are also equipped to self-assess and to make those changes and to know and identify areas of needed improvement is key. I mean, what you can learn if done right by not winning on the scoreboard can springboard to a discovery in an area that maybe you were less interested in improving on, but that was identified as maybe a key area for improvement. Once you're able to do that, I mean, sky's the limit as far as growth potential. Plus the speed at which that growth happens because of the urgency to correct it.
Interesting. So when you say self-assess in this context, it's maybe it's both. Is it both about the player's own personal weaknesses? Like I don't know, work on my backhand? Or is it more about like the team, like we're poor at skating, or is it both?
Well, I think it's both. And I think depending on who you're asking, whether it be the coach or the athlete, I think a percentage, the percentages are different, right? So if you're talking about a coach, really what you're talking about is probably more a strategy, right? Okay. Or strategic, something has been identified as a weak strategy as far as how to attack and or counter an opposing team. Right. Mm-hmm. In the end, we're talking about accountability, right? That's what this whole conversation is about, which is, are the coaches being held accountable for their poor, preparation or equipment of the athletes? But also, when you're talking about self-assessing from an athlete standpoint, there's some accountability there too. Okay. When the coach is saying, hey, we really need to work on our breakout, for example, or maybe our defensive zone strategy for defense or something like that. Mm-hmm. Then is it becoming, okay, well, am I proficient in the skills needed to do what the coach is asking, right? So everyone's doing a self-assessing after a loss, right? Well, I shouldn't say everything. On teams where people really care about getting better and learning and things like that, everyone self-assesses after a mistake or loss, right? Yeah. So yeah. In those particular instances, I do think it's both, but I think depending on who you're asking, the percentages are different versus how does the team get better and how does the athlete get better? But I don't think you can say how the team is going to get better without having some buy-in and accountability from the athletes to say, okay, how do I get better at my part of that particular strategy?
That's true. That's true. Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. Awesome. Next one reads, if you want to be the best, play the best, go out and find the best competition to play against. That's how you make yourself better. So I assume this means you're very much in fan of, kids, I guess, playing the best competition, maybe even playing up in age level.
Great question. So you asked two different things. So from a coaching standpoint and a youth development standpoint, I am not interested or a supporter of kids playing up. I mean, maybe not an age group of like one or two kids playing up on a team.
Yeah.
I am okay if done correctly that a whole team of maybe a younger age group, one step younger, plays a higher age group because it's a better matchup. I do think there is value in playing, similar age kids, both from the better team and the weaker team, right? But I don't think that a coach should purposefully put on the schedule only teams that are going to make his resume as far as win-losses look good at the end of the year. I'm less concerned as a coach on whether or not we win or lose that game, but rather whether or not we either showed that we have improved from the last game or identified areas where we can improve for the next game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That does, yeah. So it's not like you're playing a bunch of weak teams just to get like a 6-0 record. It's like you're going out and finding good competition to play against so that you as a team can get better. I guess where I'm curious about, like, because I often encourage goalies to not super high level, but play and pick up lacrosse, against better competition. Yeah. So they can see better, quicker shots. And then when they come back to their own age level, all of a sudden those shots don't seem as fast. Get curious your thoughts on that.
Well, I think you're talking about an isolating two separate experiences for a young athlete, right? When you're talking about pickup games, right? That's just them working on their own, right? What I love about pickup games is that it gives them an opportunity to maybe outside of a structured practice or the oversight of a coach or a team, allows them to work on things that they might be maybe not super confident or maybe a little embarrassed to say that they, after doing some self-assessment that they can't do that. So they're able to do that, right? In a non-structured practice environment. as far as them, you know, like the example that you had, you know, receiving shots that are going to be a little bit harder than what they might see, I think there's value in that. I think you have to be super careful, though, because I also think that there could be some diminishing returns there, right? If they're not quite ready yet for what they're going to experience in these pickup games, it could easily shift a once promising and excitement of learning a new game. If it's a little bit much for them, it could shift them to like, well, the shots are too fast, or the game is too fast, or the shots are too hard, and now I'm not interested in doing that particular position or game anymore. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't happen often. I just say it should be monitored, right? There's no reason why a 11-year-old lacrosse goalie should be taking shots from a high school senior. Sure. So that way they can see how fast the shot is. You know what I mean? Like, there has to be some limitations on that.
Yeah.
But I do think it's valuable. I think the more important thing that you had brought up was that that particular athlete is interested in working on their game outside of structured practice, which I think is a fantastic thing and should be encouraged by coaches.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point you bring up. It's got to be monitored and it's got to be the right situation. Especially because, you know, for lacrosse goalies, like, we don't wear, at least most of us don't wear like pads on our legs, you know? So it's very easy to take one off the shins. And now all of a sudden you got this whole mental thing of like, well, now I'm scared of shots, not only at this age level, just back at my own age level as well. So you're very right in that it needs to be monitored and it's got to be the right situation. And yeah, I agree. Obviously, you know, high school kids shooting on youth like that shouldn't be, but if it's the right situation.
You're talking about and that's correction, right? So if you have an 11-year-old, you know, just starting out, or, you know, maybe a couple years in, right? I mean, really, they're learning the game, right? They're just trying some stuff out because it's not a structured game or practice or things of that nature. As you get older, right, and as you get some coaching and some training, a perfect example for our goalies, right, is that they don't typically or aren't introduced to, right, how they should stand and how they should just be ready for a shot until probably maybe the 12, probably maybe a first year peewee, so which would be like an 11-year-old, right? 11 or 12 is when they're actually like working on proper stance, right? Proper positioning and things like that. Outside of before that, typically it's you have an interest in playing goalie, and then you've been coached to stop the ball or stop the puck, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas, so if you have a younger person who hasn't yet learned how to have the glove up, right, for a shot, right, and then I think their chances of success against older kids is limited, which might discourage them from wanting to continuously get better. That's all I was trying to say there.
Yep. Yeah. I love it. Cool. Last one I got here. Every job the head coach assigns is important. If they ask you to fill up water bottles, filling them up should be looked at as the difference in winning a championship. Every task can be vital to successful cultures.
Amen, right?
Yeah. So true. It's so
I don't know how much I can. I mean, for once, like my 280 characters pretty summed it up, but
it's just
what was I thinking that day, and where was I going with that? So I just, being a head coach, right, for a long time now, right? I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about being a head coach, right? I had the benefit of only being an assistant coach for a short amount of time, right? And I got a fantastic opportunity that allowed me to be a head coach, right? Now, those first couple years were probably a little bit more stressful and less successful than I would have liked, just because I still had a lot to learn, right? Mm-hmm. But what I did learn was that every task that can be assigned from a team throughout the year is very important, right? I mean, let's talk about some cliches, right? Which is like little things lead to big things, and you know, and preparation makes, you know, the performance easier and things like that, right?
Right.
So what I wanted to kind of relay there was that every job should be looked at as an important part of making the team better, right? And if you're going to be assigned the water bottles, well, then own it, right?
Yeah.
Know that coach has assigned me that, right? The only surefire way to get more responsibility is to do the responsibility that you've been assigned so great that you need more responsibility, right? So when you have a mentality like that, that, hey, if I'm being assigned the water bottles, or if I'm being assigned to take the balls home or to bring them to practice or to clean up the equipment or something of that nature, know that the importance of doing the little things and doing them well, and to do them with good positivity, encouragement, and body language can lead a long way to have an overall great team atmosphere, a team culture that can lead to unprecedented success.
Very well said. Very well said. Well, Coach, thank you so much for coming on. I can really, you know, just in hearing you chat, it's so much fun to talk sports and coaching, and I can really tell, you know, you're full of positivity yourself and just really passionate about coaching and player development and all that stuff. So thank you very much for coming on. And if people want to learn a little bit more about you, where should they go?
First of all, I want to thank you again for having me on. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for your coaching. Thank you for your podcast. Thank you for pushing out information for coaches and things like that. It's people like you that really help me want to be better, make your players want to be better. And I just really appreciate the time and the effort that you're putting into coaching and the podcast and things like that. So thank you. I really appreciate that. I'm typically not someone that's like, oh, the self-promotion and things of that nature. Social media, if I can put it out there, at Coach Jason Witt, Facebook, Coach Jason Witt, are pretty much my two main channels. I do have some, like a website in the works and things like that, but, really I'm still a little bit too busy just coaching teams. So those are pretty much the two main. If anyone, you know, my phone number and stuff is on there, you know, direct messages or things like that, I'm always here to help. I think as a coach, right, yes, we have an obligation to get our athletes better. But as a coach, we also have an obligation to make the coaches around us better. So I'm a huge believer in that. And if there's anything I can ever do as far as like through social media or my phone number or anything like that, I'm always open. Being a coach, I'm always up. Right. I may not be able to respond to you if it's super late and I'm, you know, hanging out with the family, but I will get back to you real, real soon.
That's awesome. Thanks so much, Coach.
All right, man. Damon, I appreciate it. Thank you. Keep up the good fight.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Coach Jason Witt. That's at Coach Jason Witt on Twitter. Tons of great coaching points in that episode. I know I learned a ton speaking with Coach Witt, and I'm sure you did too. You can really hear Coach Witt's passion for coaching youth athletics, for creating that environment of positivity, and just tons of actionable points that if you're going to coach a youth team, I highly suggest you incorporate into your own coaching, into your own team. So that's it for this week. Again, hope you enjoyed that episode. Lacrosse season, if it hasn't started already, is starting up soon. Get out there. Get some work in, goalies. Be well. I'm Coach Damon Wilson.
You've been listening to the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast with your host, Coach Damon Wilson.